Well, it's Friday the 13th, and for a lot of folks, that's a superstitious day. Perhaps you've done something special today and or not left the house at all. If you're into other superstitions and you're wondering where this all comes from, we are lucky enough to have Dr. Stuart Vise on the phone. He's a psychologist out in Connecticut and the author of Believing in Magic, The Psychology of Superstition. He joins us now by phone. Welcome to the Roadhouse, Dr. Stuart Vise.
Glad to be here.
Well, Stuart, it's Friday the 13th, and we're managing this interview without too much difficulty, but are you superstitious? Have you got some special routines today?
Actually, no. I mean, I have been studying superstition for decades, and I feel sort of like I owe a debt to those who are superstitious, but I'm actually not a superstitious person at all. I mean, I think we're all susceptible to it. And you know, there are undoubtedly moments when people, you know, experience fears, even if they're not superstitious. But no, I'm pretty free of superstition for the most part.
So in your studies, have you sort of maintained some macro numbers statistically? What's the percentage of the population that would consider themselves superstitious?
It's pretty tricky to get at that. I mean, first of all, let's say out loud that it is a little bit of a taboo. I mean, people don't walk up to each other and say, hello, my name is Stuart, I'm superstitious. And so even poll numbers are probably an underestimate of who it is, but of the numbers. There have been a number of polls that suggest that roughly half the population is at least a little superstitious. So it's a large number of people.
I see. And just where do superstitions come from?
Well, they come from a lack of control. You know, we have very important things that happen in our lives that we can't control. And they can be bad things or good things, or we don't have sufficient control. We worry about them even when we have some control over them, and of course that's been true from the beginning of time. And so. So superstitions are likely to pop up in those situations where every sort of rational thing you can do to control it has been expired, has been used, and you're still worried or there's still uncertainty about you know, the outcome. And in those circumstances, then people are likely to grasp at superstition.
True, and it's a bit of sort of control and explanation of the unknown. I'm glad you brought up the beginning of time. It seems we're much more perhaps disconnected, and I think of the, you know, world before the internet. And was superstitions more prevalent when people didn't have Google to sort of answer all their questions? Give us some historical perspectives on superstitions. Have they increased over time or decreased?
Well, it's hard to make those kinds of judgments. I would say, first of all, they've always existed. And I would actually say that the existence of the internet hasn't been a helpful thing. You know, people, there's a lot of, as you are probably aware, there's a lot of bad information on the internet. And I would suggest that it doesn't necessarily, you know, stamp out superstitious beliefs. The other thing is that despite the fact that we have the internet and all these devices that you would think are creating all this control in our lives, they are actually things that we don't understand. We don't understand how they work for the most part, and when they break down or when, you know, other things happen, they are just as mysterious to us as other things. And so I actually think right now we're living in a period when there's a considerable amount of superstition. It's a little bit disturbing to someone like me who is a scientist and who wants to promote reason. But I think that right now we're at a high point relative, you know, in modern times. And then the other thing is that you know, superstition is in relation to something else, right? And superstition is in relation to scientific thinking, or reasoned behavior, or evidence-based behavior, and you know, we actually haven't been doing that for all that long. It's only been in the last, a couple of hundred years, I'd say, that what we think of as modern science has been part of the culture. And so before that, it wouldn't be quite fair to say they were superstitious because they didn't have an alternative. They were doing the best they could with what knowledge was available.
I see. As a scientist, Stuart, do you consider superstitions irrational?
Yes. I mean, I yes and no. Let me give you two answers. In terms of, you know, making an assessment of what of cause and effect relationships, they're not supported by evidence, and so that would be an irrational thing to say that my lucky rabbit's foot caused me to get the job that I interviewed for today or whatever. And so in terms of a basic cause and effect relationship, there is no magic. I mean, I hate to say that. I know it sounds cruel, but there is no magic that would make superstitions work. But having said that, they do make people feel better. And so, for example, even the example I gave of a rabbit's foot in a job interview, it seems quite reasonable to suggest that the person who does believe in luck and in the rabbit's foot might go into the job interview feeling better, more secure, and might perform better as a result. At the moment, a couple of studies have tried to look at that, and the evidence is murky at the moment. It's that we don't have hard evidence that that's the case, but it seems like a reasonable hypothesis to me that on a psychological level, if you're a believer in these superstitions, they might make you feel better.
Any correlation between being superstitious and the placebo effect?
Yes. The placebo effect is quite real in medicines that we take every day. And so it is the case that that you can have sort of self-fulfilling prophecies or, as I say, psychological effects that are not magical but are due to the fact that you believe that this is going to work. I mean, that's what the placebo effect is. It's you have an expectation because you take a pill that you're going to feel better, and that expectation itself, not the pill, you know, creates the effect. And so that can happen. I mean, just to give one specific example, homeopathic medicines are scientifically not supported. For one example, they're diluted so much that there's a question as to whether or not the active stuff is in there at all. It's all placebo. So people who take homeopathic medicines and feel better are for the most part experiencing either it's just a coincidence, they would have felt better without taking it, or it's a placebo effect in most cases.
All right, you're tuned to The Roadhouse on the Shore with Dave Terstig. We've got Dr. Stuart Vyse on the line. He is an expert in the area of superstition. He's got a great book out, Believing in Magic, The Psychology of Superstition. Been studying superstition for 30-some years, Stuart?
I'd say at least 20 years.
You've been somewhere
in there.
In that field, what's some of the most eccentric superstitions you've come across? You know, I think everyone's familiar with the rabbits and the black cats and the ladders and all of this, but what are some really outlandish superstitions?
Okay, well, this is a fun topic. There's a whole category of superstitions that we call personal superstitions. They're not the classic ones that everybody hears about, but they're the ones that people develop on their own, you know, and they seem to work for them alone. And those are the ones that are very interesting. I mean, I heard of a case where, and by the way, here's a funny thing I didn't know about until I got into this, but student exams are an area where people have superstitions. When it comes to taking exams, students will sometimes do some kind of a ritual. I heard of a case where a guy would deliberately go and get a scratch-off lottery ticket before taking an exam every time he did so. The logic being that when he lost, he would have used up his bad luck for the day, and he could go into the exam with a clear head, you know, thinking as though, you know, he had somehow gotten rid of that. The problem developed, of course, on the one day when he had a winning ticket and then and then went into the exam. So you have to make sure that you can, your superstition is one that's going to work for you every time.
Yes.
I've also heard people, I had a friend, believe it or not, and this is a little bit distasteful, but had a friend who believed that his nail clippings could be stolen by someone and used against him in some kind of a voodoo-like thing. And so he would, in fact, chew them up and swallow them at night, you know, while doing his work. So.
Oh, no, that's not healthy.
Yeah, that's a little... No, it's not.
Well,
by the way, I did contact him about 20 years later, and I was surprised to see that he was still doing that. He, you know, it hadn't stopped. So
this is like, I think I know what you're onto, where everyone's got this routine of sort of habit. They keep control over this chaotic world by putting their left shoe on first or starting something off on the right foot. Now, I want to talk about where these come from, like the basic origins of some of these. Friday the 13th, for example, is it legend? Is it lore? Can you trace back some of these examples of universal superstitions? Can you explain Friday the 13th, for example?
Yes. Friday the 13th, there have been a number of different theories about how it started. And these are, you know, this is an old one, so there are different views. The one that I think has been researched the most and that makes the best sense to me, has the most evidence behind it, is a connection to, first of all, for the number 13, to the Last Supper, to the idea that 13 people at a dinner table is unlucky, and you know that of course, according to the Bible, that, you know, Jesus was betrayed and then crucified. And so the 13 at the table was the beginning of 13, and that at some point the 13 at the table idea got freed from the table and just became 13 in general, was a bad number, a fearful number, and so that allowed it to be on the calendar and the date of the 13th, and then finally, as a completely separate thing, Friday has been, in Europe at least, was thought to be an unlucky day because it was the day that hangings took place. Friday was hangman's day. And so it was always thought to be a bad idea to start a new venture or to do anything important on a Friday because it would be bad luck. And so the two combined, through the freeing of 13 from the calendar, I mean, from the dinner table, and then, you know, once you had Friday and a 13 together, then you had Friday the 13th. And so, I mean, the Friday superstition in general has not persisted. 13 continues to be an unlucky number no matter where it is encountered, but Friday the 13th started that way.
Yeah, is it true, Stuart, that like skyscrapers are built without the 13th floor?
Many of them, yes, that's right. And still to this day, I mean, I think that the Otis Elevator Company was asked by a reporter some years ago, and they said something like 80% of the elevators that could have a 13th floor don't. Wow. that they make. And, you know, I think that's a straight financial decision because there was a Gallup poll a few years back that said that a certain percentage of people, if they were put on the 13th floor of a hotel, they had a room there, they would be uncomfortable. And I think it actually, coincidentally, it was like 13% of people said that they would be unhappy if they were on the 13th floor. And roughly 9% of people said that they would ask to be moved to a different floor. So to avoid those kinds of issues, I think they do, you know, obviously the building does have a 13th floor, but the button says 14.
Well, Dr. Weiss, certainly superstitions help out a lot of folks. They give us a feeling of control. maybe we get our tests back, and or the athletes. I see a lot of superstition in sports. We don't have a lot of time left, but I'd like to get on to the sort of the difficult topic of when they're taken too far and folks are, their lives are affected. What about obsessive compulsive behavior and superstitions?
Well, first of all, let me just say that I think the negative superstitions like Friday the 13th and walking under ladders and black cats and so forth, I actually see no upside to those at all. You know, they when they come along, if you're an anxious person, a believer, then you're forced to deal with it in a way that if you hadn't learned it in the first place, you wouldn't have to. When it comes to obsessive compulsive disorder, you know, I haven't seen a direct connection between the two things. I think that, you know, superstition is such a widespread belief, and obsessive compulsive disorder is much much rarer and much more intense. They are both sort of anxiety related, but I haven't seen any evidence that, for example, superstition taken too far can turn into obsessive compulsive disorder or anything like that. They just look very similar on their face.
Is it true that if you're superstitious in the negative, you also have the positive side of things where you have your lucky tokens? Is it sort of a universal belief in both the good and the bad of superstitions?
Well, I think that because the way that most people become superstitious is by being around other people who are, you know, you learn it through your family as you're growing up. There is a tendency, and again, I don't have any hard evidence of that, but I think there is a tendency to acquire both a belief in luck and also a belief in bad luck at the same time. So I do think that they go together. But the only ones that could, I think, have any real positive benefit are the positive ones. You know, as I said, if you're going into a job interview or you're trying to perform well on the field, then those superstitions, I think, have a potential of being positive in psychological sense. But the negative ones, I don't think we need those anymore.
Power to the positive, Stuart. Thanks for that message. You know, I've got a few more questions, but we're definitely wrapping things up. And I just have one last one. It has to do with luck. Do you feel it's like a bank account, much like that student who bought the unlucky ticket and then was lucky? Is there this idea of like you have so much luck in the bank, and when you do good things, you save it, and when you do risky things, you use it? Have you ever come across that?
I think that's a common view of luck, that it is a sort of a yin or yang thing that you can, you know, like a favor bank or something that you can draw upon. There's also, of course, the idea that it sort of moves in and out of you, right? That today you're lucky, or, you know, but tomorrow you won't be, or that something has gone wrong. You know, all of these things really represent our psychological response to what's going on. That there, I mean, again, as a scientist, I would say there is such thing as chance and probability, but there is no such thing as luck. You know, happy things can happen if the time is right and if the circumstance is right, but there is this concept of luck adhering to you in some way. Is I think a psychological thing, not a real thing.
I'll believe that. Taken from a man of science, Dr. Stuart Vise, thanks so much for your insights. And the book is Believing in Magic, The Psychology of Superstition. Thanks for joining us on this lucky Friday the 13th.
My pleasure.